On the 12th of August, amidst the calamitous stirrings of the decisive battle of the entire war, Winston Churchill arrived in Moscow to tell Stalin that there would be no second front soon, a mission he compared to carrying a lump of ice to the North Pole. Stalin gave up his own dacha at Kuntsevo to the visitor. Perhaps Stalin was repaying Churchill in kind for lending his dacha, Chequers, to Molotov. Churchill decided to declare the bad news first. No second front that year. Stalin, faced with a fight for his life on the Volga, reacted sarcastically. "You can't win wars without taking risks," he said. "You mustn't be so afraid of the Germans." Churchill growled that Britain had fought alone in 1940. Churchill then revealed that the British and Americans were about to launch Operation Torch to seize North Africa. In an impressive demonstration of his geopolitical instincts, Stalin immediately rattled off the reasons that this operation made sense. Then Stalin surprised Churchill more. "Let God help the success of this enterprise." The next morning, Stalin and Molotov received Churchill in the little corner, where the Wurst handed his guest a memorandum attacking the West for not launching a second front, and again mocked British cowardice. "I pardon that remark only on account of the bravery of Russian troops," replied Churchill, who then launched into a magnificent soliloquy on the Western commitment to the war. When Churchill poked his unsatisfactory interpreter, "Did you tell him this? Did you tell him that?" Stalin finally smiled. "Your words are of no importance. What's important is your spirit." But the conviviality was ice thin. Stalin's insults infuriated Churchill, who afterwards stalked about Kuntsevo, threatening to go home. Still angry and sullen, Churchill had to appear at the Catherine Hall for the banquet in his honour. Molotov kept the toasts coming for over 3 hours as 19 courses were piled onto the table. "A complete orgy," wrote General Allan Brooke. "Among the many fish dishes was a small suckling pig. He was never eaten, and as the evening slipped by, his black eye remained fixed on me, and the orange peel mouth developed a sardonic smile." Stalin was at his most charming, making it clear that he wanted to make amends. He tried backhanded flattery by recounting that he had once told Lady Astor, "If a great crisis comes, the English might turn to the old warhorse." Churchill asked if he was forgiven for heading the intervention in the Russian Civil War. "All that is in the past," replied the ex-seminarian, "and the past belongs to God. History will judge us." Then there was a crash as Churchill's bodyguard, Commander Thompson, slumped backwards, knocking the ice cream out of a waiter's hand, which then narrowly missed Stalin himself. During the Supremo's toasts, Voroshilov, whom General Brooke thought a fine, hearty old soul, though with the military expertise of a child, spotted the general was drinking water instead of vodka. Voroshilov ordered yellow pepper vodka, with an ominous chili floating in it, with which he filled both their glasses. Brooke managed to sip his. Voroshilov then downed 2 glasses of this fire water. The result did not take long to show itself. His forehead broke out in beads of perspiration, which soon started to flow down his face. I wondered whether the moment had arrived for him to slip under the table. Just as this cherubic inebriate subsided into peppery oblivion, Stalin, who noticed everything, descended straight on him, with a toast the irony of which was missed by the Westerners. "One of the main organizers of the Red Army, Marshal Voroshilov." Yet, as Molotov and the others knew well, it was only 3 months since Stalin had denounced Voroshilov's bankruptcy. Voroshilov struggled to his feet and then lurched forward, just managing to clink glasses. As Stalin swaggered off to toast Shaposhnikov, Voroshilov, with a deep sigh, sank back onto his chair. After dinner, Stalin invited Churchill to watch a film, but he was too angry and tired. He said goodbye and was halfway across the crowded room before Stalin hurried after him and accompanied him to his car. Churchill awoke as sulky as a spoilt child, according to the British ambassador, Clark Kerr, who arrived at the dacha to discover that the PM had decided to pack up and go, sporting a preposterous 10-gallon hat, surely the most bizarre headgear ever seen at Kuntzevo. Churchill stomped into the garden and turned his back on Clark Kerr, who found himself addressing a pink and swollen neck. The ambassador explained to his prime minister that, as an aristocrat and a man of the world, Churchill expected these people to be like him. They weren't. They were straight from the plough or the lathe. "This man has insulted me," retorted Churchill. "From now on, he can fight his battles alone." Finally, he stopped. "Well, and what do you want me to do?" Within the hour, Churchill's entourage was calling the Kremlin to ask for a tête-à-tête with Stalin. The only response was that Stalin was out walking. Surely a diplomatic promenade, since Churchill's tantrum coincided with momentous events that would lead directly to the Battle of Stalingrad. At 4:30 that morning, the German 6th Army had attacked and smashed the 4th Tank Army. A more immediate crisis than an Englishman fulminating in a 10-gallon hat. At 6 p.m, Stalin agreed to meet at the little corner. At the conclusion of the meeting, when Churchill was about to leave, Stalin seemed embarrassed and asked when they would meet again. "Why don't you come to my house and have a little drink?" "I replied," wrote Churchill, "that I was in principle always in favour of such a policy." So Stalin led Churchill and his interpreter to his apartment with its empty bookshelves. The library was in Kuibyshev. A housekeeper, not Valichka, since Churchill described her as ancient, started to lay up dinner in the dining room. Stalin had planned this. That afternoon, he had ordered Svetlana to be ready that evening to be shown off to Churchill. Stalin brought the conversation round to daughters. Churchill said his daughter, Sarah, was a redhead. "So is mine," said Stalin, who had his cue. He asked the housekeeper to get Svetlana. She arrived and kissed her father, who, rather ostentatiously, presented her with a little present. He patted her on the head. "She's a redhead," he smiled. Churchill said he had been a redhead as a young man. "My father," wrote Svetlana, "was in one of those amiable and hospitable moods when he could charm anyone." She helped lay the table while Stalin uncorked the wine. Svetlana hoped to stay for dinner, but when the conversation returned to guns and howitzers, Stalin kissed her and told me to go about my business. She was disappointed, but dutifully disappeared. "Why shouldn't we have Molotov?" Stalin asked. "He's worrying about the communique. We could settle it here. There's one thing about Molotov. He can drink." When Molotov joined them for a parade of heavy dishes, culminating in the inevitable suckling pig, Stalin started to tease his foreign commissar unmercifully. Churchill joined in. "Was Mr. Stalin aware that his foreign secretary, on his recent visit to Washington, had said he was determined to pay a visit to New York entirely by himself?" Molotov frowned. Churchill noticed, not realizing he may have been sowing the seeds of mistrust that almost cost Molotov his life. But Stalin's face lit with merriment. "It was not to New York he went. He went to Chicago, where the other gangsters live." "Have the stresses of this war been as bad to you, personally, as carrying through the policy of collective farms?" Churchill asked. "Oh, no," replied Stalin revealingly. "That had been a terrible struggle." By 1:30 a.m., they had not yet started eating, but Stalin popped out, probably to hear the latest dire news from the Caucasus. When Sir Alexander Cadogan, permanent undersecretary at the Foreign Office, arrived with a draft of the press release, Stalin offered him the suckling pig. "When my friend excused himself," wrote Churchill, "our host fell upon the victim single-handedly." The dinner finally ended. Churchill begged Molotov not to see him off at dawn, for he was clearly tired out. "Do you really think I would fail to be there?" replied Molotov urbanely. Back at Kuntzevo, Churchill lay full length on Stalin's sofa. He started to chuckle and to stick a pair of gay legs in the air. Stalin had been splendid. What a pleasure it was to work with that great man. It was already dawn. The alliance was saved. Molotov arrived to take Churchill to the airport.